an unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
Happy New Year. All the best to all of us here. Leslie, what a pleasure to see you again. It's been a long time.
Pardon?
It's been a long time.
Yes, it has been about 3 months.
Yeah. Let's do introductions around.
Marie, Judy, Janine, Leslie,
Ross,
Wendy.
So we're...
Excuse me, is that light flickering bothering anybody?
I'm not the only one saying that.
No. Have a really good meditation. Vibrating.
Yeah. Do you want me to try to turn it on?
Well,
okay. You can, if you play with the light, you can possibly get the flicker.
It does that many times.
Yeah.
There.
There. Yeah, you just got it right.
That's
there.
That's it.
Yeah. Next time we'll correct it before the sitting. I apologize. I thought about it, but then I thought, it's a little bit of a fussiness sometimes.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you, Marie. So I've been in this book for a long time, and we've been talking about it for a long time also, and so I've kind of lost my place and where we are. and I think we're around chapter 16 or so.
We were talking about bending space and time.
Bending space and time. All right.
We did chapter 22 last time.
Thank you. We did 22 last time. Activity itself. Yes, we did. Thank you. So this is the commentary from another one of Dogen's teachings in Chobo Genso called Zazen Shin, which is called the Lancet of Seated Meditation. And he quotes a master, "If you study Zazen, Zen is not sitting and sleeping. If you study sitting Buddha, the Buddha is no solid form. If you become a sitting Buddha, it is a killing Buddha. If you attach to the Zazen posture, you cannot reach to the truth." It's kind of strange. to really begin to wonder what Buddha means. A friend took me to the Asian Art Museum the other day, and there were so many Buddhas up there. Oh my goodness, just dozens and dozens of every different kind of Buddha. Some were standing, some were sitting, some were starving to death. And some of the before he sat, those when it was Siddhartha doing the practices, beautiful things. So some looking like Greek statues from Gandhara. Just amazing. But none of them was Buddha. I mean, you really began to see that people were trying to express something and offer something that we could project on, perhaps. In the early days, they didn't ever do a human figure. They said it wasn't proper to do a human figure. They showed a wheel, the wheel of the Dharma only, and that represented Buddha. But I don't know, maybe people just couldn't not find some human way of characterizing it. Even though they all are so different. The Thai ones have little pointy hats on top, and Tibetan ones show copulation sometimes. It shows all kinds of different things that you would not imagine. And all of them are representations of what we call Buddha. He said, when we study Dogen's commentary on these lines, there are three important points to keep in mind. First, what's form? In Buddhism, we say there are three stages of understanding reality. Form, that form is form, that form is not form, and that form is form. Mountain is a mountain. The mountain isn't a mountain. Oh, the mountain's a mountain. None of that makes sense, except in the context of practice. When we come to practice, we're very practical often and insistent on the practicality of form. This is it. This is real. This is real. This is real. This too is real. And I'm in charge of it, you could say. It's all mine, and I can make it do what I want it to, including my own thinking. And then after we sit for a while, we begin to realize, maybe I'm not in charge of everything in that way. Maybe there's, it's all happening in a very different way. And with that insight, we begin to feel that nothing is real in the way that I thought it was. But finally, we realize that, of course, here we are, and we are involved and enacting the whole thing all the time. We are getting out of bed and washing the dishes and singing in the choir and taking hikes in the mountains, and life is good. And so form comes back, but in a very different way, because now we have a sense of how it is. It makes living joyous, and it makes dying not such a big deal. You can understand that. With that kind of insight, it's not so difficult to let things go. So he says the first stage is seeing things in the usual objective way, thinking everything is separate and independent. The second point, how do you live as a human being? (clears throat) Many people who are religious understand the first point very naturally and believe we are one with the universe, with nature, or God. They have a beautiful ideal and try to follow a spiritual life. But the problem is they don't know how to live according to that ideal in a practical way. How can a human being become one with the universe? What is it that we have to practice? There's an old New Yorker cartoon where a society lady with dripping jewels and a long dress is saying to her husband, "Oh, I am one with the universe." And he's saying to his side, "She damn well better be." It's kind of like that. Third, what is this very moment? Even though it's difficult to understand, this is important. I would say it's the most important. Otherwise, you can't practice properly. He says, this very moment is time, and we need to understand it very deeply. And if you think time is outside of you, it's objective. If you think it's in you, it's objective. And both are wrong. Time has no solid form. Time is activity itself. And we know that because we say that. Oh, I was so busy, the day just flew. Or I was so bored, it seemed like the day just lasted forever. Zazen is like that too. Oh, it was it's incredible. I just sat down and the bell rang. It's over. How did that happen? It's all very, very relative. So Dogen says about not sitting and sleeping, it means that Zazen is Zazen, and it's not sitting and sleeping. Since the time that not sitting and sleeping is simply transmitted, boundlessness of sitting and sleeping is the self. What is this that you intend to trace the degree of intimacy? What is this that you intend to trace the degree of intimacy? How is it that you can dispute on delusion and enlightenment? Who is in pursuit of wisdom in order to remove delusions? So he quotes a statement about sitting and sleeping. It's referring to four kinds of ordinary human activities: walking, standing, sitting, and sleeping. So real Zazen is not ordinary activity called sitting. Doing Zazen is sometimes like ordinary activity, but sometimes the functioning of the universe appears as Zazen. Then Zazen is real Zazen. For Zazen to become real Zazen, the form of it must be liberated. At that time, you say, Zazen is Zazen. As far as sitting and sleeping is concerned, it means you can't sit or sleep just in your own territory. You have to sit with myriad, myriad beings. At that time, sitting is nothing but the pure sense of the functioning of the universe, the cosmos. The functioning of the universe appears and Zazen becomes a beautiful, clear mirror in which the whole universe is reflected. That Zazen is completely liberated from ordinary activity. We can see the functioning of the whole universe in all of our activities, walking, standing, sitting, and sleeping, not just in Zazen. When you act wholeheartedly, your activity becomes very clear, calm, flexible, and magnanimous. It is boundless, and simultaneously, it's you. So studying the boundlessness of activity is studying the self. This is called intimacy. So intimacy is not the result of activity. It blooms right in the midst of activity itself. If you try to understand it intellectually as a concept, you never can know it. Delusion and enlightenment are also concepts, but the perfect supreme state of enlightenment is completely beyond concepts. You are already enlightened, but you can never conceptually know what enlightenment is, because when you think of it, you create a gap between yourself and enlightenment. So then he goes on to talk about swimming. That if you completely depend on the help of nature, if you're swimming in the ocean, then the water takes care of you. I've had that experience. You can fight the water, you can struggle in the water, you can thrash, or you can make huge efforts, but the more you surrender to the water, the more the whole thing becomes a mutual exercise, you could say. The whole thing is swimming. Plunging into the ocean is your effort. The usual idea of effort implies the egotistic aspect of life, but you should understand swimming from two aspects: something created by your effort and something created by nature's effort. This is true of everything. We have to try from our side, but from the other side, the more we allow ourselves to be carried, the more awake we become. He says, swimming is called vivid activity. This swimming is called play, playing with the water. So this is very good news, really. People come into Zen and they just think it's so serious. When I first went to San Francisco Zen Center back in the 70s, everybody walked around like this, with a very low mouth, and it was icy cold in there, and nobody would talk to anybody. It was this idea that Zen was supposed to be totally austere and utterly quiet, and you did not connect with anybody, which is the opposite of what Buddha was talking about. And of course, eventually it began to open up as they began to understand. They were just acting, you know, acting out an idea of what they thought it was. But you can't sustain something like that, because life keeps tugging at us. And it keeps, I mean, it's that side. It keeps breaking us down so that we can't keep that rigidity of our ideas, of our activities. We just always, at one point, have to relax into the ocean and let the ocean hold us and carry us. even as we swim vigorously. He says, all sentient beings are in the water. We are already enlightened beings who are embraced by Buddha's wisdom, because nothing exists outside the ocean of Buddha's world. So all we have to do is deal with life in terms of Buddha's wisdom. But we don't want to do it. We always do the opposite. We always see ourselves in terms of our own viewpoint. No matter how long Buddhas and ancestors try to tell us that we are Buddha, we don't feel intimate with Buddha. So, he says, we could stop the habit of seeing life just in terms of human perception. We could see human activity in terms of Buddha's wisdom. Intimacy is not something to discuss. Intimacy is activity itself. This is not philosophy, it's something you have to do. So it's about doing, which is what we were talking about last week also. That it's not an idea, it's an activity and an action, whether it's picking up a spoon to eat soup. That in itself is the action, the intimate action. We eat with everyone. We sleep with everyone. Every single thing we do is involved with the myriad many beings, including the birds and the trees and the stars. So I think that's a good place to stop. And I will keep the place. Make my very best effort to keep the place. And we'll go on. But there's time for questions and discussion. Nothing. Yes.
Excuse me. I was watching some YouTube videos on he's actually a pastor in Sacramento. There's this one professor who's looking at the Bible in terms of Jungian ideas. So like when Jesus is on the mountain, that means one thing, and the same thing that Moses went on the mountain, and when the Moses goes to, you know, when in Genesis there's chaos, and when Moses goes to the Pharaoh, he talks about his stick can be turned into chaos, and I was wondering, and so this pastor was saying, you know, you need to sort of understand the Bible in the way that they understood it and the symbols they used. And I was wondering, it seems like with Buddhism, like say Dogen is almost 1,000 years old in a different culture that, say, I've never been, you know, like with Western culture, Judaism and Christianity are much more part of our, so I was wondering, I was wondering what you thought about like the context of it that could help us sort of, because usually like Dogen, I just have no idea what he's talking about. Is there, like, are they working with symbols or stories that one could, you know, like Chinese or Japanese folk tales that we could kind of access some of this? Or,
well, they're making up stories about the human mind also, not in a Jungian way so much as pointing to different aspects of practice, so, and the experience of practice. There's so much of practice is untalkaboutable. If you, when you're seeing a mountain as a mountain in the beginning, you can talk about it and do, you know, till the cows come home, you can just talk and talk and talk. But then when you begin to have an insight into how things are, how unreal the mountain really is, or how it's changing all the time, as Dogen says, it's walking. It's just walking real, real slowly. But it's constantly changing, just as we are, so that everything is changing and nothing is still, nothing is fixed. That's a very mind-blowing kind of experience. And those old Zen sayings and stories are all pointing to different aspects of this experience, and also the experience of having seen through both those sides and just coming back and living with everything and allowing everything in a way just to be the way it is. So whatever you read is a different way it is. And modern teachers make up new stories. We have those. Some teachers have done that. Koban says we should do all of that. We should have a new kind of heart sutra that we make up, and new precepts, and everything. And of course, you know, in context, it's different. But in terms of the human mind, I'm not so sure it is. It doesn't seem to me that the ancient Greeks are very different from us, or the ancient Buddhists, or even the Neolithic period, that people at basic sense of things are five skandhas: eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. And the world and the earth is the way it is. And I think from the beginning we've tried to understand it and then made up stories around our understanding. Jungian studies, some of you know about this better than I do, are all about the unconscious aspects of our life. It sounds like a very interesting series on YouTube.
Yeah. No, I don't know how much I'm going to get into it right now, but I mean, you know, like this year. But no, I was just sort of curious about it.
So, Ross, were you talking about the symbols that the Bible uses, and maybe the Torah, as compared to what Zen poets and monks use? Was that your
concern? Well, I guess it's partly like, I just don't get Dogen or even Katagiri. It's just like, and I'm not sure how to access them.
You can't think it. That's the problem. You take it in here, which is how you sit. If you sit, you just take it in here. Let your belly be your mind, not this part. Later on, you can go back and analyze your experience. But to have be the experience, you have to give up analysis. That kind of thinking. And save it for later. That's the tricky part. Especially for those of us who, most of us, have been highly trained to think. And so that's why we're thirsty for this practice and why it's so difficult for us. Leslie?
So, when I hear the words, either your words or what's being read, there's things that resonate and make sense to me. So the idea that the mountain is a form and also is not form, but is the constantly changing thing you're describing. But I don't think I've had an experience. You know, you're pointing to when we're sitting, we'll have an insight because of an experience of that truth coming into us. I mean, I guess it's the truth coming into us. And, this sounds like a little kid, but what does it take? does it just occur from time to time, or
sit
your whole life and never have that experience?
I think you're imagining an experience rather than having it. What you're having in Zazen is what he's talking about. It's not something else. There's nothing extra. What you get is what you get. I think that's one limitation of Katagiri's book, is that he tries too hard to make it something out there that we have to work hard to get. And in one sense, of course, that's true, that we need to keep real strong faith in our practice and really do it. And faith in ourself as Buddha to really do it. Even though we don't understand it, it's all very bewildering, and yet there is something powerful in the whole message that brings us back to sitting here together like this. And that in itself is it.
But you're using the word in the three stages, right?
So yes.
Form is form, form is not.
Yes.
Form.
Right.
Or emptiness is form.
Well.
And then form is form again. And so when you say the insight that comes, that's giving, not you say, but one says, and that's giving me the idea.
Yes.
That there is there is something that happens.
There is something that happens, yes, but if it becomes a goal.
Right, that I understand.
Yeah.
If it becomes a goal.
Yeah.
Just chasing.
Yes, so it's real hard to talk about this because once you set up the goal, then it becomes a struggle. You struggle with yourself. You have an idea about how things should be, and then there's the way things are, and they just don't like each other. Yes, Jean.
So I've noticed when I listen to music with lyrics, I understand it when I hear the music and the lyric song and the whole package together. You understand it here. If you read the lyrics, it doesn't make any sense anymore.
Yes.
This seems kind of similar to that. You have to have the experience of the whole thing to understand it. But if you look at it or try to pinpoint it or analyze it, it's gone.
There's no music in it.
You're missing the big piece of it.
Yes.
And you can't do anything to get that back. It just exists or it doesn't exist.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great analogy. Yes. So, you can't work it. You simply have to jump in and trust it. It's very helpful to sit a lot. And sitting a sesshin is very helpful because many experiences come with sesshin. Mm-hmm. It's like providing an ocean for people in a way. And it's so set up that you don't have to think about what you're going to eat or when you're going to sleep. Everything is all given. And you can just rest in it and go with the bells. The bell says it's time to get up, and you get up, and the Han says it's time to come sit, and you come sit. It's such a luxury. And that makes it a lot easier than this distracted life that we have, constantly jumping in the car and going somewhere and having to take care of so many different things. So I can now say that we will have a sesshin in September. We have a date with Jikoji. Jikoji is fixing the trails, so we will have an easy way to get down there and up and around. Yes, it's going to happen. I was there on Sunday, and they assured me it was going to happen. So put it on your calendar. Come. Oh, it's after 8, sorry.
So that reminds me, the calendar is out when you sent it out. If you haven't seen it, then you're not on Wendy's list.
No, Wendy has not sent it out.
We haven't sent it out. Okay, my imagination.
I posted it on bulletin board.
Okay, my imagination.
Probably Thursday I'll have it.
Yeah, and it's on the website is updated with the dates for the half and the full day sits, except for me, because that's still being determined. And the sheen is on there, and I'll add Balin's ordination.
Yes.
Oh, and I'll add that too because Paula, that's right. Paula's going to be teaching that.
Yes, the usual February sesshin is going to be taught by Paula and Joe. Joe from Jikoji. So I will make an appearance, but I won't be leading the sesshin. I won't be there very much at all. But I'll do an ordination after it's over. And we have a one-day sit soon, don't we?
Yeah. It's later this month because we're competing with
Wednesday.
Yeah, so it's the 20th, but then we go, then we start earlier, you know, like the second Saturday, so we got that back.
Okay.
Starting in April.
So in a few weeks we'll have a one.
It'll be a full day, so there'll be Dokus on, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's do our 1 minute sit.
Did you have any announcements for Monday? No.
I think that covers it.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.